What we're doing today, this is a conference call of Bill Blatchford interviewing Dr. Paul DiCarlo. Paul has been a client of ours, and Paul is in the Retire As You Go program. He is one of the chapters in the book, and so all of you on the call have, at least whether you've read the book or not, you have a copy of the book, and we appreciate all of you doing that, buying that book. We just wrote some checks to the American Diabetic Association and also to the University of Oregon Dental School, and they're all pleased to get the proceeds. But what I want to do today is I want to, before we start to interview Dr. DiCarlo, and I'm going to set the stage a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about how to listen to this call. I want you to listen for what really strikes you in Paul DiCarlo's story, what it is about his story that is important, why that's important to you, why it caught your attention. And then I'd like to have you think about the impact this could have on your practice and your life. Paul's story is not just about his dental practice. Paul is roughly my age. Paul is roughly, diplomatic here, he's roughly my age. He's a little bit younger, however. I'm 63. Paul, a few years ago, came to me just after he had had a life-changing experience. He went into his physician, the physician in his private office said, "You have cancer." Paul had prostate cancer. He said, he's had treatment, he's fine, he survived. But he says, you know, you look at your life differently at that point. You start to realize you're not going to live forever, and you start to think, how do I spend, you know, the rest of my life? I've got a new lease on life. I got a second chance here. Let's do it right this time. Well, about that time, he heard me in a seminar, and he got to thinking about things, and loves dentistry. He doesn't like everything about dentistry. So what we did is we helped Paul, and I didn't do it. I simply was the facilitator, helped him restructure his practice. His wife doesn't really care for Florida as much and was willing and ready to move north to get out of the sun, again, for, you know, she has very sensitive skin and wanted to get further north. So they, how do we have everything? How do we have our cake and eat it too? And together, Paul and I and his wife came up with a plan that they could have a place up in North Carolina in the mountains. So when it gets real hot in Fort Myers, they can spend more time up there than they do in Fort Myers, and they can practice. The really unique thing about Paul and his practice is he bought a practice, well, 30-plus years ago, and the practice, of course, had a team of people there at the same time, and Paul still has most of those same team members that joined him 30 years ago when he took over that practice. And he has one of the most enthusiastic teams of people that I've run across in my 20 years coaching 1,800 offices. It would be fair to say, Paul, they're all a mature staff.
Yeah. Very mature. And they're trying to get me there, too.
Yes. And so it's a unique situation, and Paul is, of course, looking for ways that he can continue practicing dentistry on his terms and spend more time up in North Carolina with his wife, Linda Kay. So, Paul, I want to just start with some questions here.
Okay.
If you want to add anything to that story that I just mentioned, go ahead.
That was a great capsule of what happened. You remember very well that actually it's going to be this Thursday, the June 15th will be 32 years. We'll have our 32nd anniversary. So this is quite a week for us. It's ironic that we're talking like this this evening actually. So we're excited about that, to say the least, you know. And then
how many of your team were there 32 years ago?
Two of them, my hygienist and assistant. When I bought the practice, were there with the practice, and then my main receptionist has been there 28 years.
Uh-huh.
So I've been married 33 years, and I've been with the same women day in and day out for 32, and so I get more advice than most men get in quite a few years. Actually, it really works well though. We have fun.
If I add up the total practice staff, you have 104 years of experience together.
Yeah, with just that group, yes.
With that group of people, that is really phenomenal.
Yeah.
What are some of the keys that you would say that you could share with the doctors on the phone here that have contributed to that longevity, keeping staff that long? What's the key? Because I spent time with you and your team, and
Right.
I mean, they're a happy group. They're, it's just one laugh after another, and yet they get the results that, that Paul's looking for.
I guess, you know, thinking back on this, when I came into the practice, I was pretty green, and just out of actually, I was in the Air Force a couple years after school. So when I took over the practice and bought it, it was everything was brand new to me, and I of course knew really nothing about running a practice. And so I thought, you know, I had some people there who had been there for some years with a successful practice, and I figured back then, I said, you know, if rather than try to go in and change things and try to do things and reinvent wheels, I said, we all sat down and said, why don't we, you guys have something going, you know the patients, you know how the practice ran before the former doctor had a heart attack and died unexpectedly. So it was a going practice. It was a good practice, and it was small, but it was good in a very growing area. So we agreed to make decisions together.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being a dictator or trying to, as I said, do something that I really didn't know how to do, I said, let's talk about things and do it together. And we all started with a lot of respect for each other, a lot of trust, and that just grew year after year after year, because they knew that I trusted them, and I trusted their opinions. And we, whether it was a minor, like what kind of impression material to get, or something major like a big equipment, you know, a purchase, we all sat down and talked about it. How's this going to affect us, and how it's going to make it work for us. So over the years, that trust and respect just grew into a real family love. It really is. We make a point of having fun and celebrating as often as we can. If there's a reason to have a party, we have it. And if there's not a reason, we try to have a party anyway. So
okay. So you really enjoy everybody you work with, and I think that's one of the keys. You know, one of the questions I ask doctors in the when I do a summit with a new doctor on the program, I always say, it's August, we're going to drive an unair-conditioned Volkswagen bus across West Texas. I want you to evaluate your team on a scale 1 to 10, and 10 you would take with you just to make the trip more fun. A 1, you would buy them a first-class airline ticket, say, I'll meet you at the other end, to avoid being time with them. So you'd take all these women across Texas in a Volkswagen
bus. We have traveled,
bus.
You know, and over the years, that's something else I thought about. We have traveled all over the country for trips, whether they be courses or whether they be Christmas trips. But we've been to New York, to Vegas, to Grand Canyon. Last year we went to Branson, Missouri, for our Christmas trip, which was something different. And we've been to Orlando, to Disney, of course. And we've been, but we travel as a group. And it's funny because as we travel, each one has their own strengths and weaknesses also, and we have fun doing that. So we do. I would definitely take the non-air-conditioned van because somehow we'd make it.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the changes that you put in place when you worked with us that affected your team members? I know you put a bonus system in place. And
right.
How has
right.
that worked? And tell us about some of the changes you put in place.
What I really wanted to try to get out of what I was hoping for after hearing, after Linda Kay and I heard you in Orlando back in '98, and Linda Kay said after the day was over, she leaned over to me, and she never comes to meetings with me. And she usually, you know, the reason we went was because the first time the doctor gave me permission to leave Fort Myers after my surgery and so forth. So I wanted to go somewhere, and Orlando seemed as good a place as any. But she leaned over
to me. Had nothing to do with the speaker.
It had nothing to do with the speaker, right? but after the day was over, she leaned over to me and said, "That's your practice." And so I remember talking with you afterwards, and I remember to this day the things that bothered me the most about my practice was I hated the insurance. I wanted patients to say yes easier and quicker. And I didn't want to feel like my practice was a runaway train. It just felt like it was just moving way too fast for me. And then, of course, my personal goal was to get to North Carolina more. And I remember asking you that question. I said, do you honestly think that you can get me to that point? And you said, yes, we can. And I said, great. I said, let's get to it. And then not long after that, I had the staff all come to my home, and we sat down. And of course, the staff hates consultants as a general rule. They don't want consultants to come in there. They're nervous about it. They don't want somebody over their shoulder, this and that, so forth. But I sat down with them. I said, I've made a decision of where I want to go, where I want to be, and I really want you to be on this trip with me, on this journey. But if you don't, I understand, and I'll do the best I can to find you another job.
I have to compliment you, and I have to say this because this is a decision that you run into very often, and this mm-hmm. is. Certain decisions have been made by the doctor, not by the committee. And I wanted to bring this out because here you are with a group of women you've been with for 32 years, and yet there are certain decisions, and you share things together, and yet there are certain decisions that you make, and that's the way it's going to be. And then their choice is whether or not they will continue to stay with you. And so far they all have. But you're clear that if one of those people decides that one of your decisions is not the direction they want to go, you'll do whatever you can to help them find a new job because you really like these people. They're your family.
Mm-hmm.
But they can be your friends, but they can't work for you any longer.
And exactly. And it didn't take a second for them all to say, we're with you.
I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was quite a moment. And
I remember that.
It was just tremendous. And you know, and so That's how we started, and after that we went to that first meeting in Orlando, and I'll never forget when you were up there and you said how and the staff was in the room, of course we're all in there together, and you said, how would you like to be able to work 180 days a year, get six weeks paid vacation, and get a bonus, and practice the way you want to practice dentistry? And I didn't know that was coming. And they all turned to me and looked at me, and I said, "Whoa!" You know, I said, "You got to be kidding me!" And they said, "That's what we want to do." We all got together afterwards at one of the breaks, and they said, "Let's that's what we want to do." And so we just set our minds to it and said, "Again, how do we get there? How does this work?" And so from the very beginning, we started eliminating insurance. We started doing some of the things, and one of the things that helped me the most was personally. Was allowing myself to go at my pace. Before that, I always thought it was necessary to go somebody else's pace. I mean, you know, when you hear some of the clinicians and so forth, you hear how they talk, how they run their practice, and you want to say, well, Jesus, if that works for them, I'm going to do the same thing. So you kind of force yourself to do some things you don't normally wouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
But I allowed myself. I said, you know what? I'm slow. I'm basically slow. I'm very very. Laid back. I don't like rush. I hate being behind. I don't like to rush. I don't like. I just like to just take. I like to enjoy my day, enjoy the people, and just have some as much fun as I can working on a very difficult profession. So that helped me quite a bit. We threw the bonus in, and immediately we started making some strides in that. And one day at one of our staff meeting. The staff sat down and said, "How can we get $1,000 bonus a month? You know, for a month."
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "How much would we have to make to do that?" And we figured we went, you know, worked backwards and said, "This is what we need." And the next month we made it. And since then we haven't looked back. Since then they've been averaging at least $1,000 a month, you know, for the last 3 years now. Bonuses.
And they
love it.
And to explain the significance of that to people on the call that are not familiar with our bonus system, that means that Paul's overhead for staff is at 20% or
exactly.
Under. And if you keep your staff at 20% or under, I can basically guarantee you we can operate your practice at 50-55% overhead.
Exactly. That's right. I'm at 55%.
And you see, the reason I can say that confidently is that most practices are operating their staff at about 30, 33, 34% overhead for the entire team. And they look to what they do to try to save their overhead is they try to nickel dime their supplier, they try to nickel dime their lab, let's find a cheaper laboratory to use, or something like that. And the issue is, here we are, we're 10% high on staff, and we're trying to save 1 or 2% by trying to find the cheapest gloves on the planet, or try and find somebody who'll do veneers for a little bit less, or things like that. And they're stepping over the dollars to pick up the nickels.
Yeah.
And so the bonus system really works, and it does motivate teams. We have found that bonus system, I don't know how many hundreds of offices have implemented that bonus system. It really works as long as you have the systems in place to produce the adequate volumes of dentistry with a smaller team. And so, Paul, how many team members do you have?
So now I have seven.
Seven. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And are they all full-time?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, all except now, I have two hygienists that are 3 days a week rather than four.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, yeah, I mean, that's pretty close to full-time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So two full-time hygienists.
Three.
Three full-time hygienists.
Right.
Counting, well, the 2 or 3 days and 1 or 4 days, is that right?
Right.
You have 10 days a week of hygiene.
So exactly.
That's a large recall program. So you
right. You
operate, and just for clarification, and one thing I should say is that Paul and I, the reason I don't know these, Paul is actually does not actually work with me right now, so I'm not familiar with all of these numbers. You're operating really a general practice. It's not what you would consider a high-end cosmetic practice.
Exactly. That's the other thing I decided in my mind years ago. I really thought that I wanted to get a boutique type, just cosmetic type practice and so forth. And I did. I went to LVI quite a few times to learn, you know, how to get faster, how to get better, and so forth. And but I also had so many patients that have been with me for so many years that whose children we're seeing and whose grandchildren we're now meeting. And it's just one of those things where I really felt comfortable, and we all feel so much comfortable having a very, very strong general practice, but we are heavily weighted towards cosmetic. I mean, we do a lot of cosmetic, but we do a lot of general. And we're very, very happy doing that.
And you work 4 days a week.
Right.
And then you, now, you mentioned about not working with insurance. Could you talk a little bit about what you mean by not being insurance-driven anymore?
Yes. Up until 98, we would accept assignment and fight with the insurance companies, of course, every day about, you know, when they're going to pay, how they're going to pay, if they're going to pay. And then, of course, the treatment for the patient was always quite a bit on how much insurance are they going to pay, and that's what I want to get done because they'll pay and I can't get this other and so forth. And it was just so frustrating that every day was a fight. And when we finally, over a period of a year, we just weaned the patients off the insurance. Said, this time we're going to accept, but next time we're not, just so you know that, so when you come in next time. And I'll never forget, my receptionist came to me and said, you know, I don't think this is a good idea, and I think we're going to lose a lot of patients. And as most of you probably have heard many times, not only did we not lose patients, I can count on one hand, and seriously, we just gained more because we were just honest with them and told them we just can't be the middleman. And we are there to provide the dentistry they want, and we're not there to take care of insurance companies. And
we've given a number of doctors, all of our clients, actually, we have some scripts for that really makes you the good guy and makes
right. The
insurance companies the bad guy, runs
exactly.
The other way around. And
exactly.
You have to be proactive in doing that because these patients have been trained, in your case, for roughly 24 years before you did this.
Mm-hmm.
We'll accept the insurance for whatever they pay, and we'll wait for our payment on the end.
Right.
I don't know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you, what has happened with your accounts receivable since 98?
Ooh, that's at 98 we were at it was somewhere between $80,000-$90,000, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And today we have like a $20,000 credit.
Uh-huh. So you really are in the same position as an office we interviewed last week that really went from carrying people, being the bank.
Right.
Today you don't carry any receivables and have a $20,000 credit.
Right.
And I'm going to make a guess, you probably don't send out statements.
No.
You know, it's just amazing to me. I mean, people tell me, I ask very often staff members, I say, you know, especially those people who work in the front, what is the day that you hate coming to work? And they all tell me it's the day after statements go out. And I say, well, why do you keep doing that every month? You know what's going to happen. And all the phones ring off the hook all day with people complaining about their bill. And you just keep right on doing the same thing and wonder why they call and complain. So, all right. Now, tell me about your new patient flow a little bit. I mean, you're one of the practices in Fort Myers that does not take new patients. Excuse me, that does not take insurance. Excuse me, I said the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And yet your new patient flow has held up quite well.
You know, and that's what's been beautiful, because for many years it averaged around between 20 and 25 new patients a month, and we're higher than that now. We're probably closer to 40, although a lot of new patients are there for strictly a cosmetic consult.
Mm-hmm.
Some aren't really there to say, they don't know us really, but they've been referred. And
mm-hmm.
and I think over the last 3 or 4 years, after doing a lot of different types of advertising and trying to position myself as a cosmetic dentist in Fort Myers, and after doing enough patients, about three years ago, I noted that we kind of hit what I'm calling a critical mass, where we have enough patients out there that we've done work that are happy, that are referring enough patients to us now, that I'm doing, I don't know, I probably average at least one cosmetic consult a day. And usually the consult goes something like, the person comes in, we sit down, and you know, so-and-so referred me, I like what you did, can you do it for me? And usually the two questions I ask are, what would you like done, and when would you like it finished?
Mm-hmm.
And that really, we just had a woman, in fact, just last week, that literally was what I asked. And she told me, and I told her the fee, and she walked up to the front desk and paid the fee and scheduled it for later in June here and
mm-hmm.
left. I mean, it was that fast. Now, not all of them do that, obviously. But I'm seeing more of that, and I think a lot of it is because of time spent laying the groundwork to get to that point. Because
mm-hmm.
For a few years that didn't happen, and it took a lot more communication and so forth. The skills that we learn with you, and how to talk to people, and what, you know, really what do you want, you know, type of thing.
You know, I just got off the phone with one of my current clients that is struggling a little bit, and some of his team members think this is pressure, and he's trying to point out there's no pressure at all. It's just, what do you want?
Yeah.
How badly do you want it? How is it going to improve your life? And what would you like to do next, basically? And
right.
if they say no, it's okay. And he
right.
says they're struggling with the fact that
right.
what they've been doing for 20 years, in his case, they go in with an agenda to sell dentistry, or to sell Crown and Bridge, or cosmetic dentistry, and that's an agenda. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that is an agenda,
mm-hmm.
and that's really not listening to the patients. It's really, you know, I'm going to listen to you for a moment, then I'm going to tell you what you need, and then I'm going to tell you why you need it. I'm going to give all my medical training to scare you into doing this, and that's pressure, and we don't do that anymore.
One of the hardest things that I had to get used to was it's always easy when they say yes, but when they say no, it's difficult not to go into that little routine you just talked about.
Yes.
But you have to really honestly say, if they say no, that's fine. That means that today it's no, but it doesn't mean it's no tomorrow.
That's right.
And many of those people called back, and they said,
that's
you know
right.
what, I saved up, or I got this whatever finished, this, that's what, I'm ready to go. Can we get this started?
And what was real important is not to put pressure on them and drive them out mm-hmm. of the practice because
mm-hmm.
they're not ready to go today,
mm-hmm.
and to keep them in the practice.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, I'm going to open this up to questions from some of the doctors on it. I'm sure you've perked up
sure.
some of their interest a little bit. I'm just going to open it up to anybody that wants to start, and then I may call on some of you. Who'd like to be first?
I would.
Go ahead.
Stephen. Paul, I got a question. Like, you
sure.
say you have 2-3 staff members with you for 30 years.
Yeah.
When you hire new staff members, do you look at age and try to spread it out a little bit, or is that not a concern?
Look at age, you said?
Of the people you're hiring.
Okay. No. In fact, the people, I haven't hired anybody in a long time. it's really kind of funny here. I'm thinking back to the last person. It's been I don't know how many years now, but what we used to do is basically look for the personality. Our office, we were lucky because we had people asking us, when someone leaves, please call me, I'd like to work here. Or we had other, you know, other assistants from other offices or hygienists or whatever, and they would say, you know, if someone goes, call me. And we did. But we called the personality. We didn't call the how much experience they had or how much, you know. And what I did is I let the staff interview them before I did, because I trusted them. I said, you know, you guys talk to them, you know, see what you think. If it's something that looks good, then it'd be worth, you know, talking with them and get more serious. If it's not, then it's silly to spend my time talking to someone. Mm-hmm. So we didn't base it on anything other than whether or not we thought we all liked the person, they would fit into the practice, and then from there, the experience didn't make a difference either, really, because we could teach them what we wanted done.
If the attitude is good, you can teach almost any skill.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. Good question, Steve. Who else?
Paul?
Yes.
Hi, it's Suzette.
Yes.
I opened my practice from scratch 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm only really booked out probably 2 weeks at a time or a month in advance, depending on if it's busy or slow.
Yeah.
It would be pretty scary for me to drop insurance, because 80% of my patients are signed up with Delta or Blue Cross.
Mm-hmm.
When would you, or did you feel like you were, it's like a suicidal decision, or did you have so many patients that you felt like you had to eliminate some?
It was scary. It was really scary. But when we approached it, very slowly. Number
there's
one,
there's a plan.
we went into this knowing it was going to take at least 1 year. You know, we did not try to do that. We did not go back from the meeting and
could I interject just here for a moment before you answer this question? I'd just like to say to Suzette, we do not recommend that everyone drop insurance. That is not a recommendation. That's something Paul wanted to do.
I see.
That is not something we do not tell clients. See, I don't have an agenda either for my clients what kind of a practice you should have. My job is to talk to doctors, find out what they want.
I see, and help us get there.
Assess where they are now, and then help you get from point A to point B. And I would not tell, you know, for example, if a new doctor, you know, is a couple years into practice and you're only booked a little bit. Of course, if you're booked for tomorrow, you're successful. I mean, don't worry about the next, that's 2 weeks extra you've got out there now. So tomorrow is full, that's fine. But I would look at that, and, you know, one of the questions, if a young doctor came to me and said, I want to be insurance-free, and I don't have very many patients, and I would probably say, well, tell me about the demographics of your community. What drives it? And if you said Grand Rapids, and I know it's a big union town, and I know that 80% of people there have dental insurance, my next question would be, are you independently wealthy? and you see, if you are independently wealthy, I've had clients that are independently wealthy. I have a client I work with currently, and sat down in the summit, and we discovered, and we asked about that. Are you going to inherit some money? And he says, well, I'm going to inherit about $3 million from my parents, but my wife is wealthy. Oh, okay. We talk about that. We're looking at $20 million, and so, you know, he can do whatever he wants. Now, you can't just answer that across the board that everybody drops insurance. But let's go back to answer the question: how Paul did do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, Paul, how did you do it? How did you drop insurance?
What we did is we went into it knowing it was going to take a while, and we said we told ourselves at least a year. Because we wanted to gradually do it and be sure, and we did not want to send any letter of any sort out to anybody.
No.
We strictly talked to the people literally one by one as they came in for recall. Where we were going and why we were doing it, and I swear to you, they all understood exactly, and they agreed. You know, that's the funny part, was that they said, I understand what you're saying. This medical stuff, too. We just kind of threw it back on them and said, you know, you see what's happening in medical insurance. And well, we just can't do this anymore. And they all understood. So we just slowly did that and weaned off, and now it's not even an issue. They don't even we don't even discuss it. I mean, it's kind of like we if a person really is getting something they want, the money's not the problem. It really isn't. They, you know, whether it's one crown or whether it's you know 10 veneers, it's really when do you want to do it? You know, and that's the question. Really.
Well, that's a tough paradigm for dentists and teams to understand, that when people really want something, it doesn't matter. But all you have to do is go out to a local appliance store and look to see what people are buying without insurance. Go to a local car dealership and see what they're buying without insurance, and you know, get at any airport. And my gosh, the airplanes are full this summer, and none of them have travel insurance. And so people will spend money for things they want, and that's really what it boils down to, the fact that they have some. Now, Paul's office does, I don't know, but I imagine they still fill out an insurance form for a patient who has it.
Yes.
And you help them collect the money, but the patient has paid you.
Exactly. I'll go 9 yards, all the whole 9 yards as far as I love to write. When they get denied something, I love to write letters, and I'll fight tooth and nail to get them what they deserve, because they know that. They know I'll do that for them, because we tell them, you know. And we
however, you've been paid.
What's that?
But you've been paid.
Oh, yes.
Yes. See, this is the only difference, is that the patients still get to use their insurance. It's
right.
Just that Paul is no longer the bank for the insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right.
Or have to swallow all the write-offs.
Yeah. Or he doesn't have any write-off because he's not a participating member, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And so, well, that was, yeah. Randall or Sherry, do you have any questions?
Yeah, this is Randall. I have a question.
Yes.
For Paul, is when you went over to getting your staff to go on board with you,
yes.
Did you have any that dragged their feet, passive-aggressive kind of? To you, to me, they say, yeah, they're for the program, but they're not. You know, they're trying to subvert it on the side.
Oh,
did you have to deal with that kind
of? Did any of the staff members do that?
Yeah.
Oh, no. They really, truly wanted, and this is what's so neat, is that we've been together. They truly wanted what was best for me, just like I truly want what's best for them. And that's how we operate. We just make sure that everybody is happy. I want because when it's happy, the patients see that. They know that. It's a happy place. And when they come in there, they talk about the, you know, how do you guys, you know, there's a lot of laughter going on. There's a lot of serious
dentistry. I've been to your office, and they serve Spunkmeyer cookies in your office.
Yeah, cookies.
I actually accuse them of a little happy powder in their cookies.
Yeah.
They're really having a fun time in there.
It's just really that way. It's not a put on. And, you know, and I have to say also, you know, to be fair, you know, we are together, you know, all day, every day, and so forth. And I'd be lying if I said we never had any disagreements.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's just my wife and I've been married 39 years, and if we said we've never had a disagreement, you know,
right.
I'd be lying to you.
Right.
I mean, you know, we have. Of course,
and
we do.
And of course, you do. But we all agree to talk about it. We said, look, you know, at the end of the day, you discuss it and get over it, type of thing. And some of the staff members will have. I mean, cat fights with whatever. I mean, it just happens. It's just life. That's
absolutely
the way it
life.
Really is.
You put human beings together, and there's going to be disagreement.
Yeah, but I tell you, if anyone from the outside messes with any one of them, it's like heaven help them.
Yeah.
You know, they group together. They get together like it's a immovable force.
And so I think part of the answer then, Randall, on that is that. No, he did not have anybody in that subversive category. However, you know, he did say to them, this is what I'm going to do, and I want all of you on board, and I do understand if you don't want to be on board, I will do whatever I can to help you find a new job.
Yeah.
Because I'm going this direction, and if you don't want to go this direction, this is not going to be good for you, and you should not stay around.
Right.
So that's part of that leadership that I spend a lot of time with doctors on. Paul didn't need a lot of this, but a lot of my clients need a lot of leadership direction because they're weenies.
Yeah.
In other words, they want to make every decision by committee, and they're always looking for an approval. Now, Paul wants his staff to approve. However, there are some decisions that he's going to make as the leader. He has that prerogative, and this is the decision I've made. Are you with me? And if you are, fantastic. And if you're not, it's fantastic, too. You just can't continue to be here.
Right.
You know, I have this discussion with a man in Oregon that I refer to all the time. His name is Les Schwab, and he has 7,000 employees. And people literally compete for jobs to work for this man. He has 400 tire stores in the Northwest. And these guys will have $1 million in their pension plan when they retire if they start with him at 18 years of age. But you do it the Les Schwab way. I mean, there are decisions that have been made that are not up for discussion, and yet every one of those, and I don't know all of his 7,000 employees, but I can tell you when you drive onto his lot, these men run to your car. They don't walk. They run to your car, and they greet you with a smile on their face, and they run between jobs. They literally, if you watch them, and it's just fascinating to watch because these people run between jobs of changing tires. I mean, this is difficult work, and they run. And those are some things that are absolutely part of the culture there, and it's not open to debate.
Yeah.
You show up for work every day. Everybody is clean cut looking. They have short hair, no visible tattoos, no body piercings, and they have a clean white shirt on every time they see a customer. And there are certain things there that are absolutely not debatable.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they love Les Schwab. They love the man. They love him.
Yeah.
Good question. Good question, Randall. Who else? Gene, do you have any questions?
Well, I'm kind of like in the same corner as Suzanne. I took over a practice who had been around for about 25 years. The man sold the practice and basically, left. There was no transition period, so I'm sort of like in the same position. I lost a lot of patients, and because I was one of those guys that didn't understand how little he knew. And right now I have two employees, basically my front desk and my hygienist, and I'm looking to try to get more patients in. But I had worked with another fellow prior, and he basically did not believe in insurance. You know, he said, "Well, no, you don't want to go that way. It's going to be suicide for you." And I said, "Well, how else do you expect to get people into the door?" And so I listened to what he said, and cut out a lot of my insurance, and sure enough, just as Suzanne was fearful of it, a lot of people did leave. But the ones that are there, basically, like Blue Cross Blue Shield and Delta. But I'm starting to notice that, for the most part, we collect in advance. After having listened to you, I thought, yeah, this is ridiculous that we should send out statements. And it really does work. I mean, we've done it for a little bit now, and we noticed a dramatic decrease in our accounts receivables, and people aren't really putting up much of a fuss at this point. But my question, more or less, is my staff now really would like a retirement fund, and they would really like some other benefits. And I was wondering, how did you work that into your staff? With you having so many staff members, I got to imagine it's got to be huge to take care of that as well, and I'm new at this, so I have no idea how to even implement
something
like that.
I did it slowly over a period of years, starting way back in the 70s when I first started, but when I could do something for the pension or profit share, you know, or something like that, we did. We kind of, and the way I did it years ago was, instead of giving salary increases, I did it with benefits, different types of benefits. And for different people, we had different benefits, and it kind of worked out that way, where over the years we just slowly worked up that now we do have a profit sharing, we have a 401k plan, we have I have a long term insurance for the employees, long term care insurance, but what's neat is that it happens over a period of time, it's gradual, and that now, as Bill was saying earlier, I basically tell the staff that 20% of the business is yours, and with no limit. I mean, whatever we do, you get 20%, whatever that is, and so they have these benefits. But we didn't start with those benefits. We had to gradually work up to it. But they're all very, very happy, comfortable right now, and they don't. I mean, they don't want to not work. There are a couple of them that don't have to work, but they don't want to sit home. They really don't.
one of the reasons that I wanted to interview Paul on this call. It's been 8 years, actually, since he did our program, and he put all these things in places, and I wanted to demonstrate that these things work and they do have longevity, and that this does work over a period of time. The changes he's put in place in his practice weren't put in all at once. And I think anyone that tells any doctor just across the board to drop insurance really needs to examine that a little bit, because you've got to understand a lot more about the practice and about the doctor and the finances and everything just to carte blanche say, don't accept insurance. Well, that's a tough one.
You know, and I have to say this too. One of the strengths of the program that I look back on now is that the Florida group we had, a lot of times when you go and have consultants, a lot of it is cookie cutter type mm-hmm. situations. And this is the first time, and I've had a lot of consultants over 30 years, and you know long term, short term, this and that, and so forth. But this is the first time that it literally was each practice was specific for what that practice needed.
Yes.
That's the first time I've ever seen that. And it was wonderful because we all sat there in the room and Bill was able to do what was needed for each individual practice because we all weren't the same. And that was neat to see, but we all shared in the victories.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's right. The thing is it has to be custom because everybody is different. Just on this call we have people who are new in practice, people who start from scratch, people who bought practices. Everything is different. Different parts of the country, different demographics, the economics are different. Dentists who do different kinds of treatment. It's all individual, and of course, doctors of all different ages. I mean, here we have Paul, who is at an age where age and financial situation, he could retire if he wanted to, but he happens to love what he's doing, loves his staff. So why would he quit? He gets a lot of time off, and
yeah.
And that's really what he wants. So,
mm-hmm.
Good question.
Yeah.
Who else? Does any of my staff have any questions for Paul that might be useful to other doctors?
I got one more if I can.
Go ahead, Stephen.
Paul,
yes.
You're still working 180 days, right?
Yes.
And you're talking about the North Carolina. Do you have a plan in place to phase down to maybe two, three days a week?
Yes, I do. I do. I'm working on that now as we speak, actually. And I've talked about it to my staff also. But we're all getting to the point where I guess we're getting spoiled. I don't know what it is, but we don't want to work 4 days a week anymore. We want to cut back to three.
Before some of you came on the call today, Paul and I were talking. I gave
yeah.
him a plan. I said how to take next August off.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if he asked me to, I'll give him a plan to work 3 days a week. I have a number of clients who are working 3 days a week, and Paul is the perfect candidate for that. He could work 3 days a week and add 4 more weeks to his time off, and it wouldn't make any difference. His net would probably stay just about the same as it is.
And that's what the staff we're talking about. And I think even the staff is to the point where even if we didn't make quite as much, they're willing to accept that because the
yeah.
time now is getting more important even for them, not just
yeah.
for me.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, again, it's kind of fun to see how things evolve. And what was important to you isn't quite as important now, and other things are taking the place. And we love our days, but we like to have some more time, and some more time, maybe chunks of time. And so we've just recently started talking about that. So it's ironic you're asking that question because that's exactly where I am right now.
Well, I want to thank all of you. Our time is almost up. I want to thank all of you for being on the call. I want to thank Dr. DiCarlo for volunteering his time to do this and perhaps offer some encouragement to all of you. And again, what I'd like you to do is think about what it was that Paul talked about that caught your eye, caught your ear, why that was the case. And also I'd like you to think about what impact that had and how you could apply this to your own practice. Carol, Peter, David will be calling each of you. I'd like you to at least take the call. If you're interested in doing a program, work with them. If you're not, just say so, and we'll certainly leave you alone. We don't like to bug people in any way. But think about how this would impact your call. Paul was given one of those wake-up calls partway through his life when he was diagnosed with cancer. And so, most of us don't get that wake-up call. We just keep living our life as though it will go on forever. And there's a blessing in pretty much everything that occurs, and sometimes having a wake-up call like that, in Paul's case, was a real blessing because he said, okay, I've got another look on life. My cancer is cured. I get to live longer, so now let's do it in a way that is more rewarding for me. And of course, part of his reward is helping take care of these wonderful women who have worked with him all these years. And Paul, I want to thank you. So thank you, everybody, for being on the call.
Yes, enjoyed it.
Hope to talk to you in the future.